Welcome to the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by JosephAuto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, every Tuesday, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers take you inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Hear from players, coaches, and anyone else relevant to the team throughout the week. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or listen on our must-have Bengals app. Let's go.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP, back by popular demand. People want this one, Jim.
They do.
People are excited. A lot of people on Twitter just blowing us up right after the draft saying, all right, when's the BBP for this? When's the BBP for this? We needed a nap, okay?
We did.
Like, we needed a serious nap time because it is labor intensive, those 3 days being completely bunkered up. And that comes off of all the extra stuff we do in the week leading up to the draft to try to pump all that out there. So I don't know about you. I was tired.
Yeah, you know what? I'll give you a little bit of shine here.
A little?
Just a little bit. No, I mean, you handled the brunt of the pre-draft stuff, a lot of your mock drafts, your breakdowns of the receiver position, which they end up going for in round two. I know we'll get into a lot of really, really good work.
Thanks,
on your
man.
End. Yeah.
That's good. That's good. Makes me feel good.
Yeah.
I think as a team, man, there was – obviously, everything is up on Cincinnati.com, all our coverage from the weekend. The draft tracker has links to all of our stuff for every player, so you can go there to that. Make sure you pick up – if you don't have the Bengals app, you need to have it by now, the Cincinnati.com Bengals app. Go pick that up. There's a link to it in the blog for this podcast. Where it's, you know, it was great. We were sending all the picks directly to people as they came so they could get nice and drunk on Friday and Saturday night. And we just buzz them and tell them who they took and some information on analysis on all of them. And so all that's up there. And throughout the rest of the offseason, we'll be sending you news because you never know when it's going to come this time of year. So we bring it to you. Make sure you have that. And, thanks to everybody that was so interested in the BBP and wanting to get the next one because it's exciting. To bring it to you. We're just going to go in. We're going to dive in. We are eventually going to run through all 7 picks, talk about them, bring you some audio from a number of them, and some reaction from veterans, things like that, for everybody that we've talked to over the last few days. So this will be we hope it'll be informative. Let's start here. Well, I mean, we in all the videos and everything else we did, I mean, I think we have some takeaways. But what was – when you look back on the draft, I mean, what do you think will be the biggest – is the biggest development to come out of this?
The pick I liked best was William Jackson III, and not just because I was a William Jackson III hipster by saying he would be the best fit for this team at 24. I like that idea, the concept of drafting those guys in the first round, and I like him as a player. But my biggest takeaway actually was Tyler Boyd in the second round. I think he's a slot guy. You know, I know Ken Zampezi, the offensive coordinator, said, hey, eventually he can move outside, and maybe that would be next year or in 2 years when Brandon LaFell, if he doesn't stick around. But essentially it's a second-round pick on a guy who's going to, if they start in New York with 3 receivers, 4 receivers, he's there, right? Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because he's a guy who you know, will need to make an impact right away, but not be asked to catch 75 passes. Like, it's interesting. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of
he could be one injury.
Yeah, I never expect injury. So I guess like it's one of those things where these other receivers who are picked ahead of him will be expected to do certain things, whereas he's coming in. Andy Dalton told me earlier on Monday, like, hey, it's AJ and Tyler and Brandon LaFell, and Tyler's just got to run his routes and learn how to read me in the slot. Like, he basically said he's put in a position to succeed already. Yeah. And I just find it interesting. Like, this dude could catch like 40 passes, but have a huge impact on the season.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So I find that's my biggest takeaway. Like, they kind of drafted for need when they try not to. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that. I would wonder if you took their roster away from them who they would have taken in the second round. Yeah, I mean, I think it just finally caught up to them. It had to. It had to.
Yeah.
I mean, they wanted the receiver in the first round. You know, I think this is a good time to talk big picture of what they were trying to accomplish in this draft. I don't think there's any doubt that those four receivers were the focus of their draft. That at 24, they wanted one of those four receivers. Treadwell was at, I mean, I think Treadwell was at the bottom of the list. I think we've gathered enough to know that. That I would have been interested to see, had Treadwell been there and Jackson, who was higher up on their board.
Right.
Because they loved Jackson. They had him as one of the top corners, but the need and Treadwell being what he is, I think they would have pulled the trigger on Treadwell. Hard to know for sure.
Right.
But I think they would have. And so the option was, and they field calls about going up and down in the first round.
Right.
And they were in conversations to go up. They were in conversations to go down. But those conversations have a certain level of seriousness where you don't know how serious it really is. They're doing their due diligence to put in calls and see.
Right.
Think about what you would have had to give up in the first round to get the receiver. If you wanted to move up, you have to move up to the Jets spot maybe. You could talk to Houston or Washington. Obviously, Washington was interested in moving, but they ended up taking the receiver.
Right.
So I don't know how interested they would have been in coming all the way back to 24 and possibly being left out of the receiver conversation if they did like Doxson as much as they did.
Right. I think that's why Washington made that move, because they knew they would still be able to get one of the receivers they liked.
Well, I think they from what I gathered, they said, okay, you can have our pick, but you have to tell us who you're taking.
Yeah.
And they said, we're taking Fuller. So they said, all right, sweet.
Right.
We'll take your seventh-round pick for nothing, basically, to get the exact same guy.
Or, the Bengals would have had to
leap. Because people didn't expect them to go receiver there.
Right.
I don't think anybody did. That was the one chip that fell that I think threw off the Bengals' plans to get the receiver in the first round.
Right. Because out there, Captain Kirk and Jay Gruden's going to light it up 60 times. Kirk Cousins is going to be throwing it 60 times a game.
Yeah, he won't like that. You know what I'm saying? Although their receiving group, man, it's the real deal for 1 year at least.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got, you've got DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon are both in contract years, and now you throw Doxson in the mix. It's a pretty mean group. But Gruden, I mean, when he was here, preached the need to have multiple. He's a multiple weapon guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't care if you have one great one. He wants four very good ones.
Right.
He wants to keep the defense guessing that way. But anyway, it's off of Washington. My point being, here's basically what your options have been. If you were going to try to move up to 21 or 20 to hop everyone and get Doxson or whoever, you basically would say, would you rather have Josh Doxson or would you rather have Tyler Boyd, Andrew Billings, and Clint Bowling?
Right.
Because you're giving up two fours. You're probably giving up a four next year.
Yeah.
And a four this year to move up four or five spots to get Josh Doxson instead of what you ended up with, which is Tyler Boyd. You tell me.
Or there are three, like the one and then Nick Vigil this year. Like they would have had to give up one of their other high picks, which, again, with only seven picks, it's a high price to pay.
Yeah. It would have had to have been a three and probably a six.
Yeah.
Which maybe you are saying, I'll take Josh Doxson and give up Vigil and Cody Core. Maybe you will. But for me, as well as the Bengals have done in hitting some real big home runs in the third and fourth round, some of their best players are from there, I'd be hesitant to make moves like that. And they could have. And then the same thing can be said in the second round. They could have moved up about 10 spots and gotten Michael Thomas.
Right.
But your price is similar there. When you're talking about now, you're talking 10 spots
right.
to get ahead of where he ended up going at 47 of the Saints. You're giving up probably a couple of fours. It's if you look at the draft trade chart, that's what the rate is. However you want to pay that piper, whether it's next year or one higher pick or whatever, you're probably giving up the equivalent of a couple of fours.
Yeah.
And Geno Atkins and Clint Bowling and Marcus Hardison are all guys that are fourth. Pecco, Robert Gathers.
Right.
You go all the way back. I mean, there's been some very good fourth-round picks here that you're just saying, we don't need that. And maybe you don't because receiver is a bigger need. I can see the argument, but
and I, honestly, I don't think this receiver class is worth any of that.
Yeah, how big you is know the what difference I mean? Between like, Josh Dotson and Tyler Boyd? Maybe it will end up being huge, but there's been second round is not exactly a barren wasteland historically in recent years.
Put it this way, that's the thing, Paul. Like to me, there's AJ Green and Julio Jones, and there's those guys.
Right.
Right? And then there's, like, all the other guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And what's the difference between the 22nd pick and the, you know, 55? But again, you're talking about 32 teams. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I'm one of those guys who am, like, receiver and running back. You can find them unless they're – the AJ Green type, you know what I mean? Where you're like, okay, that dude we need to get in the top five or the top seven, you know. So those guys aside, so maybe that's just me. So, but I think you know, at 55, yeah, Tyler Boyd, compared to the other ones, especially in this offense and what they need and his relatively limited role at least at the outset. I don't know. It's worth keeping your other picks.
Yeah.
I guess is where I'm going with that.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. You look at – you're right. Outside of those top guys – and I wrote earlier this year about the wide receiver sweet spot, and that was where the Bengals were picking. And you look in recent years, some of the guys that have come out of that 20 to 30 area, and there's some big old names. DeAndre Hopkins, Dez Bryant, Brandon Cooks, Kelvin Benjamin, Demaryius Thomas – Kendall Wright, Nelson Aguilar. I mean, that's the most of the list. There's right. There's like only but a couple of busts there. And that's fine, but the second round wide receivers are not that different. You've got Torrey Smith, Jarvis Landry, Allen Robinson, Randall Cobb, Alshon Jeffrey. These are guys. I mean, if you did your research, how big is that gap?
Right.
Not enough to give up a couple of picks, a couple of fours that could turn into Clint Bowling or Geno Atkins or Andrew Billings. I don't know. So I think everyone wants to see moves. Everyone wants to see the aggression. And we've talked a lot about the dedication to 2016 and kind of selling out. If this were next year, I think they make the trade. I mean, they clearly were interested. They wanted to fill the receiver thing in the first round. They loved those four guys. If they had 11 picks, we're talking about something different. Yes. They had seven.
Yeah.
And they have spots to fill because of they lost some guys in free agency.
Right.
They needed to churn over. And so, I don't hold it against them not trading. And I think a lot of people were bringing that concept up. They should have maybe made a move and been aggressive. I hear that argument, but I would counter with everything we just talked about as far as it's not like they're not going to be able to find somebody. Now, if Boyd had gone in front of them, then it would have been a fall off because then you're into a bunch of guys that you really don't know about. But I think Boyd brings enough to the table. So I'll start going down the line and just talk about these players now and get into it. We kind of went a little bit of big picture there. First round, 24 overall, Will Jackson III out of Houston. Basics on him, best ball skills in the draft. Almost anybody you talk to will say that. Led the country in pass breakups, had picks. Now, granted, it's Houston. He's catching some AAC balls.
Right.
All right. But nonetheless, he played his best games, though, against their best competition. He balled out against Florida State, had a couple of picks. He actually went against Tyler Boyd in a bowl game at one point.
They didn't match up much though.
And it was kind of a real sloppy day and one of those crappy – well, what bowl was it? It was a – auto care or something or other. Yeah,
I don't care about any of those bowls. Yeah. I'll be honest.
You're not a weed or bowl
guy? I'm not any kind of bowl guy. Unless it's got Cinnamon Life cereal in it or Lucky Charms. That's the only kind of bowl I care about.
Yeah.
Honestly?
Frosted Mini Wheats bowl, I'm down.
Yeah. I'm not into Laramie Tunsil bowls.
No.
I'm not cereal bowls, y'all. I knew where this was going to go. We're going to get a tweet.
Yeah.
And they're going to say, you know, Jim, we know why you like them Lucky Charms. That's not true.
Can a man just like marshmallows and not be on drugs? Why has it got to go there?
Right. I mean, William Jackson hits all of the boxes for a first-round corner that the Bengals like. I mean, it's pretty – he's fast. He's tall. He can play man coverage.
Yeah, he's that type of
guy.
He's,
run. You know, yeah, he can run. He's played a lot of games. You know, he's been healthy. I mean, it's one of those, like, you know, it's like when he came out, it was like Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, you know, he just fits all of those things. I don't think there's any surprise.
And he gets to, and the Bengals get to stick it to Pittsburgh, who I guarantee you was taking William Jackson at 25.
Yeah.
They end up taking Artie Burns from Miami, yeah, well, but, which is way another, off the radar.
Yeah, and another, and I think another corner with their next pick.
Well, yeah, so they need, I mean, they needed secondary help in a big way. So, that's the first time they've taken a first-round corner in forever. They have pretty much a franchise-wide philosophy not to do that.
Right.
And it's caught up to
and
them.
They had
in
to kind
years.
Of just take a guy.
Yeah, I think they, yeah, we'll see. I mean, you never know, but he wasn't one of those consensus.
No,
types.
He definitely was a project in a lot of
ways. I mean, I've been looking at it, and I don't remember seeing much of Artie Burns' name at all.
No, he was I think once people got a feel for – actually, you know, Alexander falling was more interesting than anything. I think he went in the second round. Burns was sort of mocked. And late mocks to Pittsburgh, I think once people kind of figured out that – you know, William Jackson. I think people got a good sense that there were those receivers were going to run, you know, late in the process. But yeah, no, we'll see him. He'll gun. He'll play some nickel or whatever.
And if guys get hurt,
Dre and Adam both played a lot of snaps last year. Dre, I think, played the most snaps of anyone in the secondary.
Dre has a history of injury. Right. Adam has a history of injury. Darquez has a history of injury.
He'll play. Their goal is that he plays like 60 snaps on defense, I'm sure. But you'll end up seeing him.
Yeah, in some capacity. So now you've got four first-round corners again. I went through and just ran through the list of teams with how many first-round corners every team has. There's a group of them that have two. There are two teams that have three. And they both are because of Cincinnati. Mike Zimmer and Houston, which has Jonathan Joseph, who the Bengals drafted in the first round way back in 06.
Right.
Ironically, at number 24 and now wearing jersey number 22, exactly the same 10 years later. Just kind of interesting circle of life moment there. But that's the Bengals are just the team that does this.
Right.
This is what they do. And in this league, I mean, you're starting three of them.
Yep.
You're keeping six probably.
Right.
I would imagine. So that's what this league is. I mean, everyone's out there in three wides now, throwing all over the place, and you got everybody that can cover. And DBs get hurt more than anybody else. So I don't have a problem with it when the receivers were gone.
Right.
You know, I mean, you just go best player available there at that point. Now, there is fallout to this, of course, because you know what you don't want if you're in the NFL? A first-round pick come into your position during your contract year. That is bad news for you, you know. So our boy Dre Kirkpatrick, ever loquacious.
Yes.
Always happy to talk to the media. Just as nice a guy as you'll find. Was happy to talk about the situation. Actually, him and Adam took William Jackson out to dinner at Ruth's Chris.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Pack, you just signed $22 million. Now, I know you got some stuff to pay. And Dre, you just got that fifth-year option.
That check doesn't come, though, until week one. So
That's true. Those checks have not arrived yet. Still, you're in the league. You know, and William, he's about to get a nice little first-round cut. You can't go to Ruby's. You're over at Ruth's Chris. Although they love Ruth's Chris, and that's fine. I'm not here to hate on Ruth's Chris.
But you are.
In comparison to you got Jeff Ruby is doing things here. I mean, Jeff Ruby's got his Ruby's is right a couple blocks away. The precinct. I don't know. That's just – they took him to Ruth's Chris. Fair enough. And just to welcome him all in and all this stuff and kind of give him the ropes. Anyway, Dre talked with us, a group of media today, in general about his reaction to this guy showing up and what it means for him and everything else going forward. Some interesting stuff from Dre talking about the arrival of William Jackson III. Here's Dre Kirkpatrick.
Another corner walks through the door. You know, they say you can never have enough.
Like I said, man, you know, I feel like that was just something we needed, you know. not to knock on Adam. You know, he's about to be 30 something, you know, so it's a great development process right now that he's going to have to go through. We got a lot of guys he can learn from, and, you know, I feel like, you know, that was what we needed. He was the best available guy for our team, and I feel like we did the right thing to what was the best availability.
I saw the picture that Pac tweeted or put on his Instagram. I mean, how quickly does that come together when you see they draft someone from your spot and you guys get a hold of him in a hurry and say, hey, let's go hang out with another guy?
Yeah, I mean, it's no bad feelings, you know. I mean, I feel like I'm still the left corner, you know. Pac feel like he's still the right corner. Like I said, he got to come in and he got to work, you know. Like I said, man, I don't think we're drafting corners right now to come in and start. We got too many of them. It's all about development, going down the line. And that guy, he get older, he mature. You know, he going to be a great value to our defense.
I mean, when they drafted you, Leon was here in practice.
Exactly. He's walking into the same situation that me and Quez walked in, just the room a little younger. You know, he have a lot of guys that was more of his peers. When I came in, guys was – the next guy to me was 7 years already in the league, so it was kind of difficult for me because I had to mature very fast.
Do you take a guy under your wing like that?
You got to. You know, I'm in a different role now, you know. As far as drills and things like that, a couple years, I was in the back of the line. Now I'm in the front of the line now. So it's a different role that I play.
What did you impress on him staying patient? That it is about developing. It is about, you know, you might not actually see the field this year.
Right. I made that clear to him. You know, I'm just telling him all the things that he needs to expect. Just keeping it real with him. You know, not being one of those side guys that say certain things then it's really not what it was. No, I let him know what it really was, you know. I want you to come out here and compete because at the end of the day, we're trying to win a Super Bowl. It's not about him taking somebody's job. Nobody don't care about that. He got to go out here and work like we got to work. You know, it's all about at the end of the day, how can we make this team better? If it's a special team, corner, you know, anything, what can you bring to this table to help us get to the Super Bowl?
Do you view this different than when Quez came in? Because you are, it's a contract year. I mean, right. There's no hiding that.
Right.
Do you view it differently when a guy comes in when you know that you're going to be up after this year?
Yeah, I mean, I ain't tripping. You know, I ain't tripping. They going to make it work. You know what I'm saying? I know I'm going to work my butt off to go get it. I don't want nothing handed to me. I want to go out there and take everything I want to get. But with your question, though, you know, it was different. I wouldn't start. I won the starting quarter, so it wasn't my fault that I wasn't playing, you know. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, they, like I said, they ain't drafting for me.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So
how do you view this year, given the contract and all that?
You know, the contract. That's something that I'm really not even focused on right now.
Of course, yeah.
But I feel like they're gonna make it right. You know, if they want me here, they're gonna make it right. If they don't, you know, I just got to go out there and put my best work on film.
You kind of view it like really nothing really affects anything. You go out there and play great, things are going to happen good for you.
Right,
you know, regardless of where, how, whatever it is. Is that kind of your view on you?
No, I want to stay here. You know what I'm saying? Like, I like it here. I'm starting to go out more. I'm starting to interact in the community. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm just not getting over that hump where it's instead of being out sheltered, just getting out, meeting new friends, meeting new people. You know, cause I used to sit around in the house all day by myself and do that. You know, so those are some of the transitions that I'm starting to go through now. It's going to be pretty good.
All right, so there's Dre. And just to quickly kind of tie a bow on this, I mean, what is the end game here? Because here, let's talk from Dre's angle. You're Dre. It doesn't matter. He's probably still going to start. Nothing's really changed. They're not bringing William Jackson in to come take his job week one. He would have to be amazing. And even then, I think they still wouldn't want to do it.
No.
If Dre goes out there and plays really well, someone will pay him.
Most likely the Bengals. My opinion. I mean, Jonathan Joseph walked away, but...
Bengals tried to sign him.
Right. And recently, I mean, Leon Hall has been re-signed. Adam Jones. I mean...
It depends on where their priority lies.
Right.
I mean, he could be very similar to what George Iloka was. George Iloka's played well.
Right.
You're like, he's really good. You wouldn't put him up there in the must re-sign AJ Green category, or even Marvin Jones for them. I mean, Iloka was prior to ours, right. Below Marvin Jones. That's two below his one. So if he doesn't end up the number one priority for them next year, if he ends up two or three, there's a good chance he would go. But if he plays well, someone's going to pay him. He said himself, yeah. I want to stay here. I want to be here. I want to involve the community. I love it. And I believe that. But I don't think this affects him as much as people want to. It may affect whether he is back being a Bengal again, because the Bengals can replace him at a fraction of the cost.
Right.
But for him, you go play well, somebody's going to pay you.
Right.
So, he's gonna have a year with all the pressure on to put it on tape. However well he plays is however much he is worth. And the Bengals are going to be willing to pay a certain amount. And if he plays really well, like you said, I think they will. You're right. They would pay. It's not a big free agent year for them next year.
Right.
What? Gio? Is
Kevin Zeitler.
Kevin Zeitler. Zeitler they may do an extension with.
Yeah.
You never know.
They're Ryan Hewitt they like. They would like to, I mean, we're talking – now that's like way little money compared to what Zeitler and Kirkpatrick are going to command.
Yeah.
And then Gio would be below that. It's definitely not like a year ago this time.
Mm-hmm.
Zeitler's a borderline Pro Bowler. Dre has some work to do to get to that point.
Yeah.
Unlike the other guys, I mean, Marvin Jones, the thought was, hey, here's a guy who catch a touchdown. I mean, he got $40 million.
Yeah.
So, a little different.
We're talking a year ahead from now, but it's just if you're talking about the end game ends up being with this, the Bengals can now keep three first-round corners even if Dre left and pay two of them, haven't even had to pay the big money to, only one. So, and they love – so like Josh Shaw.
Yeah.
Who's still there. So, anyway, just food for thought. And I've already started scouting 2018 corners, just so you know, because I'm sure that's when they're coming up next. All right, let's move it along. Tyler Boyd, the receiver, finally comes after Sterling Shepard went off pretty early. Mike Thomas went off at 47. He was sliding a bit, and there was a moment there where everyone kept thinking, maybe Thomas will make it to them. He only needed to get about three or four more picks, because then you would have gotten into the group of Minnesota and Houston and all those that took receivers already. But so Thomas didn't slide. I think they would have. I think it went in the order the Bengals had it, and Boyd was there. Background on him: great hands, really, really good hands. A lot of great in traffic, contested catches. He's not the fastest, 4.58. He's not the strongest. He's like 6'1", 197-ish. But really savvy, short, intermediate, great type. Projects as a really good slot receiver immediately with possibility to move outside and do more. Some of the comps that we've heard, and this is, I think, where it gets interesting. I've seen from what people have told Tyler told us this, and what you've seen in any sort of scouting. A lot of Jarvis Landry comparisons, and it makes sense. Also a second-round guy, knocked for a bit of the measurables. Jarvis Landry got a 4.77, which is why he went 62nd or whatever. Right. Jarvis Landry went a Pro Bowl. Jarvis Landry caught 84 balls.
Right.
In his rookie year, Keenan Allen is another one who they knocked for speed. He was like ran like a 4.7, had bad quarterback play at Cal, played with Marvin Jones there, and ended up going over 1,000 yards as a rookie. So Jarvis Landry in the last 5 years of receivers drafted in the second or third round, Jarvis Landry had the most receptions in his rookie season. Keenan Allen had the most yards in his rookie season. That type of receiver. The short, intermediate, running the slot, doing some of that type of stuff with good hands, whatever, have tended to be the quickest producers, that type, outside of your top 10 number ones. I mean, I think that's a nice fit. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on Brandon LaFell to not suck. I think it's a nice fit for a guy to come in and produce right away. And sort of like you talked about earlier, they're not going to need him to come in and catch 84 balls for 1,000 yards.
Yeah, and I had touched on my thoughts on Tyler earlier. But, yeah, I to just piggyback off that, I do. I think it's really his production in this offense will to me, I think Brandon LaFell comes in with Andy Dalton's immediate trust. Veteran, Super Bowl, I'm going to throw it to that guy. I trust that he's going to learn how to pick up an offense. Tyler has some work to do in that regard, right, as a rookie. So I think his production may not match all of those just because of, again, I think Ken Zampezi, again, we don't know what he wants to do in this offense, but considering his coaching tree, his dad, where he – like, I can see Andy Dalton pushing the ball down the field. And, yes, you need a slot guy. I think he's a good fit. Good pick. We'll see.
He's a move the chains type.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's what they need.
Exactly.
Tyler Eifert's the touchdown maker.
Yeah.
AJ Green's all everything. You need to push the chains guy, the reliability guy. What did we talk about before this draft? We said there's two things they're looking for. One and 1A. Over the top and reliability. Both are hand in hand. There's a few guys. There were a very finite number of guys that were both.
Right.
And they weren't there. So they got reliability. And I think a guy that can produce, he has great hands. That by the way, as a receiver, that's important.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with it. I'm also interested. This is my crappy college quarterback strategy in picking guys after the first round. Find me a guy whose quarterback was pretty shoddy. And in this case, three quarterbacks that were kind of shoddy, at least especially last year. And you show me a dude that has great hands and route run, all that type of stuff, all the stuff that you want to see, but maybe didn't have – maybe imagine what his numbers would have been if he would have played with a quality quarterback. They were just producing touches for this dude. Right. They were running him on reverses. They were lining him up at running back, quick hit screen, just to try to get the ball in his hands because their quarterback couldn't do it regularly.
Right.
Now give him Andy Dalton that can put it on a dime for you. I'm curious to see how that works out. That's how you find Jim. That's how Jarvis Landry and Keenan Allen turned into who they did and for the guys that we're talking about earlier. So anyway, another comp that you mentioned during the draft was Randall Cobb as well. Second-round pick, did a lot of different things.
Right.
You know, obviously you didn't know a whole lot about, but playing in the slot. But you think the Bengals would have taken Randall Cobb? Absolutely.
Right.
You know what I mean? So second-round receiver, guy with some things he can do, not bad. And plenty of confidence. Which brings me, because I'm a segue master. We talked to him on his conference call with reporters. This is right after he got drafted on Friday night. And we're going to give you a portion of what he had to say so you can hear from new Bengals receiver Tyler Boyd about joining the squad.
Man, I'm pretty happy. You know, I just can't wait to start my next chapter in my life. You know, and I'm really happy and appreciative that the Cincinnati Bengals have chosen a great player like myself.
So being a great player, what do you do best?
What you say?
Being a great player like you are, what do you do best? What do you think the best part of your game is?
Best part of my game, I just create opportunities for myself to win. You know, I put myself in a position to win. You know, I put myself in a position to run good routes and beat defenders with my leverage. You know, to keep plays alive. You know, I'm a huge playmaker.
You play all over the field. Do you have a preference of what your role might be?
No, sir. You know, I feel like I'm best available at slot or outside. You know, they can move me around a lot or even in the backfield so I can get mismatches with linebackers, you know. So I feel like I'm a great, great aspect into that program.
How do you rate yourself as a blocker on the edge?
I would say about an 8.
About an 8 out of 10.
You know, I want to take about 2 points off, you know, because I'm not as bulky as everybody thinks that I am, you know, but my hard-nosed instinct to be a football player and my willing to do things to help my team win is at a high level, you know, so I'm going to definitely get everything out of take and sacrifice my body to help anybody on this team create a huge play.
All right, there's Tyler Boyd. So the Bengals move on, and and I'm sure every team has this, but it's like some about the third, fourth, fifth round always has the who they pick. Just it's always that's the round where you get the guy that the coaches just they found their guy.
Right, yeah.
Where do we gotta go to get my guy? This is he's our kind of player, even though most people probably don't have the same grade on him.
Right.
Well, that guy's Nick Vigil.
Yeah.
And he played with a rat tail, which is sweet. He does not have a rat tail anymore. I am going to spend a good majority of our offseason convincing him to grow it back because rat tails are sweet.
Yeah. I don't think it'll happen.
Why not?
I think he'll try it and just get destroyed in the locker room and have to cut it off.
Well, yeah,
or he'll get so destroyed that he has to keep it because he was destroyed. I don't know how that dynamic works.
The early stages of rat tail growth are ugly.
That's what I'm saying.
Those are some rough. That's why cutting it had to have been real hard because it take you got 3 to 5 months of real concern from people when you're trying to grow a rat tail like that. You know, I still think I got to come up with a plan of attack to make this happen, but I want to make it happen. Here's some background on Nick Vigil, why they like him. pass coverage linebacker with some great instincts. That he's not your big, thick thumper like Maluga and Burfict that are going to blow dudes up, but he fits a new school mold for them, in their opinion. That he can run and cover, and he has good instincts to go make the plays in the running game. He's not going to hurt a guy. He can get him down.
Right.
But, you know, they think he can make those plays. And, you know, second straight year with a third-round pick, they take a, quote, instinctual linebacker. P.J. Dawson came with a similar cred. They love production, boy.
Yeah.
And they saw the production they needed to at Utah State, which is where he was from. Kind of a mad pick. We'll see. Maybe he's good. Maybe he's not.
Yeah.
He's going to be a special teamer this year, barring injury.
Yeah. And I think I would say the only difference, people wonder, like, well, how does he compare or relate to P.J. Dawson? I think the difference, at least that I heard, because we didn't see P.J. a lot last year, so based off just what the coaches said, Nick Vigil played middle linebacker at times in base defense for Utah State, kind of the leader of the defense in that way. Kind of can play all three spots seamlessly, whereas PJ, they said he's got to learn linebacker a little bit, you know, and while he's instinctual, needs to get the playbook down and the assignment, you know what I mean? So I think while they're both instinctual, I think they like Vigil in the sense that he's not as, you know, maybe he can catch up a little quicker, maybe the learning curve isn't as steep, whereas PJ has, and I'm just guessing on this based on trying to recall from last year, maybe more pure athleticism. Remember, it was like PJ's this – they call him almost a Tez Jr., Tez Light. They didn't say that about Nick Vigil, even though they like his athleticism. So, you know what I mean? I think that's – people are wondering, like, what's the difference between the two, and I think that's probably it, where maybe if they're looking a year down the line, Carlos Dansby's up, and they're looking for guys that kind of fill in around Tez, I think – in a 4-3, Vigil could be a potential middle linebacker for this team down the line.
Yeah.
Only he wouldn't have to come off the field on third down.
Yeah.
Down the line.
They made the comparison. They made Luke Kuechly comparisons.
Yeah, I wasn't about to say that.
I'm just telling you what they said.
they didn't want to say it.
No.
But they did.
Yeah, they did.
They're like, we're not saying this, but.
But, I mean, Paul Gunther leaned into the mic and said, a certain hometown prospect right. that played in the Super Bowl. Yeah,
it was kind of
I'm
fun.
Not exactly giving you Luke Kuechly. You can't just say it's Luke Kuechly every time you see a productive white linebacker, okay? Listen, I'm sure Nick Vigil might be great, but he's taking a third round for a reason. Let's take it easy. And that's what they said. We're not throwing that around.
They just threw it out.
Yeah, I mean, we're not, because we don't want him to have those kind of expectations.
Right.
But that is the mold that the characteristics
right.
they see in him.
Right.
Coverage, instinctual, can get the guy down, blah, blah, blah. Let's move on because it got real interesting in the fourth round.
Yeah.
So as Friday night goes through into Saturday morning, everyone kind of came in on Saturday saying a lot of the same thing. What happened to Andrew Billings? Why is he still around?
People were waiting for TMZ to show up.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Is there a gas mask?
Right.
Like, what, is there an injury? Everyone's searching, right. asking doctors that checked him out. Like, was there an injury thing? Is there a knee risk?
Right.
Why is this guy that everyone had in the – first couple rounds, still sitting there as
the fourth round started.
Everyone continued to pass. And no one really seemed to have an answer.
Right. It was crazy. For all of the madness in the first round about Laremy Tunsil, and we know why he dropped. For all the madness about Miles Jack, and we know why he dropped. Billings, it was just like,
why?
He was kind of forgotten about because he wasn't as hyped as those two guys. And the reasons for his dropping, as Marvin Lewis shed some light in a little bit later, was really interesting.
Yeah. So you just kind of say, well, why is he around? And so we the Bengals started talking about him seriously in the third, and I think he was in the back of their mind in the second.
Right.
But they knew what they were going to do with the second, so it wasn't a real part of the conversation. But he was around the conversation there. They had him rated pretty high. So it came a point, and like Marvin Lewis told us, you just got to take that guy at some point. You can't. It doesn't matter the need. It doesn't matter fit. It doesn't matter anything you think. At certain point, if a guy you have rated as a second round guy or whatever they had, you know, I would venture to say 2C3A
right.
Type guy is still sitting there at 4B. You got to pull that trigger.
Right.
And you know, I don't know. It's hard to know exactly why he fell, but they'll take it.
Right.
Because Andrew Billings is a 315-pound defensive tackle who in high school squatted 805 pounds. Now, I know you're the workout master. Hey, but I don't know if Kevin Zeitler had you over there squatting 805.
No.
That is a massive number.
Yeah, even
that is an ungodly number.
Yeah, it is. Even for professional athletes who lift a lot of weight.
Yeah.
That's competitive weight, and that's what Andrew Billings was. He was a competitive power lifter.
Yeah.
The Bengals like the fact that they feel it translates to football.
Yeah.
You know, Jacob Burney, new D-line coach. It'll be interesting to see how these guys develop. Especially Marcus Hunt, that's a whole other thing. But,
yeah.
I mean, Billings, as Marvin Lewis said, he probably dropped because he's only 6 feet. And they're like, but we got a good rep with six-footers.
Yeah, you know who doesn't care about powerful six-foot fourth-round defensive tackles? The team that drafted Geno Atkins 5 years
right.
ago.
And Pecco, I don't know what he's listed at, but I can tell you, when Domata stands next to Geno, I mean, it's not like Domata's towering over
no.
him. So, I mean, in terms of those guys, Brandon Thompson, same thing. Wallace was a little – Marcus Hardison is not huge. Deshaun Williams is not huge. They like those low-leverage, powerful guys who they think it translates.
And those guys are the ones – I mean, if you're talking about the most dominant defensive tackles in football last year, who are you talking about? Aaron Donald and Geno Atkins are probably the first two names off of your
right.
mouth.
And that's why they both
They're
probably
both
fell.
Low-leverage defensive right. tackle guys. I mean, Aaron Donald fell to 13.
Right.
But, I mean, considering how
right.
good, how dominant
but he
was
yeah,
in
he
college.
Probably, yeah, fell to – you're right. But I guess, like, Geno probably paved the way for that.
Geno, yeah, well, absolutely.
Right.
If Geno Atkins wasn't a thing, I don't think that Aaron Donald would have been a
right.
thing at as high as he went. But people saw the anyway, point being, Billings has 20 times more great tape than Geno had coming out. I mean, that's why he was ranked so high by
right.
all these national
right.
people, because his tape flashes. I mean, it's this massive dude – that just throws people aside and just blows up runs
right.
over and over again. He's got work to do as a pass rusher.
He's only 21.
He's 21. I think there's still a thought of how much can he help you on a pass rush down? Maybe not a ton. But neither was that position right now.
Right.
Domantha Pecco is playing two downs, and then they're running to their fly pass rushing groups come in
right.
where they move whoever to the inside, whether it be Margus or Will Clark playing from the inside
right.
or it was Gilberry at times last year. And they keep, I mean, they bring your pass rushers in on third down. Hell, you're bringing your passers in on second down
right.
half the time when it's second and 10.
Right.
So it's fine to have that. I mean, the way they run their rotation, if you have a guy that for two downs out of three can hold up four dudes next to Geno Atkins,
right.
that means something.
Right.
And
he might be able to eat 266 pancakes
he
in one
might.
Sitting.
In one sitting.
Yeah.
Which is just absolutely amazing. We will bring you. It was, I mean, so I want to do this. I want to bring you a plethora of things here from the Billings pick. I want to bring you some of his conference call. So this dude, who, by the way, can throw me and you above the Enquirer building, is pissed now.
Yeah.
Like, this dude is not happy. He wants to wreck this league
yeah.
and tell everybody how dumb they were in the process. That was apparent on his call. Not long-winded,
right.
but to the point and very serious about it. So I'm going to bring you a little bit of Andrew Billings' conference call here, and I'm going to tag on the back of it some comments from Marvin Lewis and from defensive line coach Jacob Burney, just to kind of about the guy he is, give you a better feel for Andrew Billings. So here's that group: Andrew Billings, Marvin Lewis, Jacob Burney.
What was the moment like when you finally got that call?
It was a huge moment because I hadn't seen it on TV yet, so I didn't know who was calling, but it was huge for me. It was a big relief.
Were you surprised you were there this long?
Yeah, I was, but hey, what I say?
Andrew, how much does the fact you fell leave you with a big chip on your shoulder?
It's huge. I can't even explain how huge it is. I like the feeling, though. I actually like the feeling.
What was this wait like the last couple of days? I mean, did you have a bunch of people over at your house Thursday night?
Yeah. I had a bunch. My agent was here, and you know, it was a little anxious at first, and then my agent started going crazy, third round fast, but and then we sat down, we talked about it, and thought about Geno Atkins. He went fourth round as well. And, you know, for me, I'm just happy to be drafted.
What do you know about Geno?
Not much. I think he went fourth round. Was good. Great, actually.
I think he was the strongest guy up until about 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I don't know. I don't know how you guys figure that out. But is he a guy that you had watched? Because you know,
I never watched him actually.
Oh, you've never watched him on tape?
Yeah, I'm about to go watch him now.
Okay.
So, what teams, as far as your agent, the knowledge you get from your agent, where did you expect to go and when? Had he imparted any of that to you? Did you ever?
Yeah. I mean, we had. Minnesota was expected, Green Bay, Redskins. Those are all possible first round, late first rounds. I'm basically same teams in the second. And I believe when the third came around, Minnesota was going to pick me, but that is a trade with the Dolphins. I got a lot of picks, you know. They weren't going to pass up, so I didn't get picked there. And came around to the fourth round, Cincinnati got me.
You think the disappointment of falling this far will just kind of roll off your back and be something you forget about, or is this something you're going to carry with you all year?
Yeah, it's not something I'm going to carry with me my whole life. You know, and it's actually a good thing for me, actually, I believe.
So you're going to go out there and make everybody pay for passing up on you, huh?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
How did your time as an offensive tackle in high school also kind of prepare you, at least through college, as a D tackle?
Yeah, that helped me a lot. You know, I kind of learned the rules in high school. I know what they're willing to do and what they can't do. I know where their eyes need to be, and really, I know a little bit more about, you know, using my leverage. Just being a tackle, you know, the linebackers will always give you that dip on your shoulder and you just miss them. And I started using that myself in college.
Is it true you had 266 pancakes in high
school? Yes, sir.
In one sitting?
Blocks.
No, yeah, blocks. Blocks. Blocks.
Oh, blocks.
No, sir.
Oh, man.
It was a really exciting for us. Andrew Billings was one of the guys that we had rated pretty high. And just felt like he comes in, and what he provides for us is a guy within our defensive line rotation, but a real anchor point. He just turned 21 a couple weeks ago, so he's a young guy with a lot of upside. Just played 3 years of football there at Baylor, and he's been just a really strong and productive player, and he's got a great future ahead of him. He's strong, can really use his strength and so forth in the line of scrimmage, and will really give us an asset that way.
I know generally the media, we don't know a whole lot, but it seemed the mystery of after yesterday was, what happened? Why is Andrew Billings still around? Why do you think that it is that he was still around?
I think his height, maybe, is restrictive in some ways for some people at times. But, we've done pretty well with these guys that we've been able to find that way, that have certain characteristics that catch our eye. And then, you know, you get to know the player a little bit more, and you really like everything about him. That's good. I mean, We couldn't be happier.
I mean, where you rated him, obviously, it was almost impossible to pass him up this time around, too, right?
Yes, that might have been mentioned.
No elaboration.
no elaboration. But that, you know, we've done a good job of drafting to the best player that we have graded consensusly, you know, as a consensus and as a room, and to not bypass that. And to at some point, that guy has, you know, we got to pick that guy, and we'll find a place to fit him in. And this was the case here with Andrew. You know, let's make sure, again, as I've told you, this room is as pretty as we can make it, you know, and as much as we can, and then go from there. So it felt really good. So
in your system, in that system of his, how is he as far as the lateral movement up and down the line, stopping the run. Seems like that's something he did really well too, being able to move.
Yeah, and that was the point I was making about the strength part. A lot of times when we talk about those things, you talk about like someone is stiff, you know, that's you know, a bit stiff in his hips, and it really make those plays that come right at him. Well, this guy moves, you know, like I said, tackle to tackle, you know, and then running long, you know, running for long plays, sweeps, screens. You know, this guy's a leader. You know, he's a tough-minded individual. He's young, you know, but he's a leader. Tough-minded in the sense of responsible-minded, discipline-minded, which is a bigger part of playing defensive line is anything. You know, but you have a your job may not always be the one to make the tackle, but you make more plays than tackles, you know, in that position. You know, and so this guy understands responsibility as well. You know, so there's a lot of upside to this kid.
You know, you probably haven't talked to him too much today, but do you think him falling to four, he's the kind of guy that's going to come in with chip?
You already know it, don't you? Yeah, that's how these guys are made. Yeah, he's, you know, they should have taken me whenever, you know, and that's fine. That'll just be motivation for him, you know, from that standpoint. You know, hopefully be motivation this entire career, not just for a year, you know. So, yeah, but he's that kind of person.
All right, so I hope you all enjoyed the joke from the conference call where our good friend Jeff Hobson of Bengals.com came out of his confused moment of trying to transcribe the conference call to wonder if Andrew Billings could eat 266 pancakes at once. I mean, it's still just hilarious. I mean, the conference call basically ended at that point.
Right, it was over.
We couldn't get it back together. Like it was too much. It was too much. It's one of the funniest conference call moments I've ever been a
BBP
part of.
Listeners, you never fail us. I want to see this to see if you're still listening and if you're paying attention. Hit us up on Twitter, #BBP, #266 pancakes,
yep,
and @JeffHobson.
@JeffHobson.
Let's have some fun.
Let's have some fun.
Let's have some
fun.
I want
your photos. I want your memes. I want your Photoshops. I want your stacks. I want pictures of your own pancakes. Yeah, I actually was gonna eat pancakes for breakfast. Have three pancakes in front of me just so I could text him a picture and just say 263 more to go. You know.
Now that this is out there, we're gonna have some fun on Twitter with Jeff. I mean, he's a good sport. He owned it. He asked, he's like, how long am I going to have to live with this? I said, Chief, this is going to last a long, long time.
A real long time.
So
a real long time. In one sitting? Oh, just unbelievable. All right, so that was that. And the fun had only just begun on Saturday.
Yeah.
Saturday was a more eventful day than either of us anticipated. I can tell you that much. So, fifth round comes along. When a fifth round offensive lineman comes along, you don't expect storylines.
No.
Okay? But when it comes along on a team where there has been so much fan outrage and general discussion, we've discussed it plenty, around Russell Bodine and his future and how he's the weak link on the offensive line. And most of all, it came to a head this year when people started discussing the concept of Ryan Kelly in the first round, who ended up going 18th overall to the Colts. And I still am very curious to know what would have happened if Ryan Kelly was there at 24, if you're talking about if they were weighing between Kelly and Jackson, that would have been an interesting conversation to have. But anyway, because of that, people talk, well, if he's there, then you could bring him in and take Bodine's place. Yeah, I think that's something that they would have considered. But after that, I don't know that the payoff would have been enough that it would have been worthwhile. Just keep going forward with Bodine. They've done well as a line with him at the center of it for a while, although he is young and struggles. So, questions. Paul Alexander comes down to talk to us about Christian Westerman, who Arizona State guard, didn't play any center there, but can is the thought.
Right.
So the line of questioning continued to go about, well, can he play center? When can he play center? Do you expect him to play center? And that prompted him to finally have heard enough and want to address Russell Bodine's treatment from everyone. It wasn't a media-specific thing. It was just a general thing. So let's start off with bringing you the conversation with offensive line coach Paul Alexander after the Christian Westerman draft pick and addressing Russell Bodine and all things Italian barbers.
And he's a great kid. He's the type of guy that gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning and works out. He was a good athlete. You know, he played basketball. He played baseball. He boxed. He has incredibly strong hands. He's tougher than hell. He's the toughest kid in the draft. And we've done that now. When Whitworth came out, he was the toughest kid in the draft, and Bodine was. And I think Fisher probably was last year, so
yeah.
He fits right into when he's the toughest guy in the draft, I usually put a nice box around him. And
yeah.
This division, you got to be.
Yeah. I
mean, it's not for the feeble.
How do you determine that, Paul?
You watch the film. And my best thing is I shake the kid's hand, I look him in the eye, and I judge the percentage that he would kick my ass. You know? And if I think he would really destroy me, then I like him. Some of these guys I think I can take. So they go right off the list.
So what was the percentage with Chris?
Oh, I'm not going to share that because he gets back to him. But he just needs to know I got old man strength, which still counts for something.
How important was it when you worked him out that he showed he at least could play some center? How big was that?
I didn't work him out. He was he came here for his visit, and he hadn't played much center. He hadn't played in a game, and we took him through the film and so forth, and I had the feeling that he had the capacity to do it. It won't happen overnight. It would be a year away or whatever before he could do that. And so I think he was a versatile guy. Yeah.
He's as athletic as he is, like you said, in basketball, baseball, but I mean, you'd think he could transition to doing that job.
Which job?
To go from guard to center.
I think he's an inside guy. I think he can play both. I don't know where he'll go. All right, you guys are asking about the Bodine witch hunt.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about Bodine. All right. Let me tell you about him. He's better than Bowling was after 2 years. All right. He's similar to what Zeitler was. All right. Zeitler didn't start out all that great. And then I was talking to Witt. I was talking about Rich Bram, and Witt said, "Hey, don't compare Bodine to Rich Bram." I said, "Witt, Rich Bram didn't step on the field till his third year. Now, this is a young player, his second year, who's playing with a bunch of veterans who are very good offensive linemen, and he's the last one right now because he's the youngest. But I don't care what anyone else says. I think Bodine's going to be a hell of a player." So that's where I'm at on that.
When you say witch hunt, does it get under your skin when you see him being criticized?
It pissed me off. I was at the barber yesterday. I go to Salzano's. I mean, they got three Italian barbers there, freaking yell at each other. They're all brothers, and they're getting on me about Bodine. I finally had to tell one to F off. You know what I mean? Jeez, I came to get my hair cut in peace. You
know?
It does.
What is it that other people don't see that you do see so much in wrestling?
Well, I just think he's young. What's funny, when you look at his birth date, he's the same age as these kids in this draft. You know, he came out 2 years early, and he's incredible strength and tough, and he just needs to learn how to do it, you know, and it's going to come. Yeah, they all do that. I mean, they don't, like I said, that he's better than some of the other guys at the same point in their career.
All right. So, point taken.
Right.
Right? Paul Alexander, 2 years ago, stood on the table and said, "This is the guy you've got to go get." And the Bengals traded up in the fourth round, which they almost never do.
Third pick.
Third
time ever.
Third time they've ever traded up. And it was because Paul stood on the table and said, and they needed a center, and said, "This guy can play. He's a tough son of a gun."
Right.
Plays with a mean streak, and he's big and strong enough. He had, what did he have, like a crazy number of reps on the bench, 42.
Yeah, it was a big number.
Which is the Paul Alexander staple.
Yeah.
And this is the guy to handle the AFC North. And you tell me, is that the sound of a guy who's feeling the pressure off of defending Russell Bodine and understanding? He's admitting that he is the weakest one on the line.
Right. Yeah, it's sort of couched in his way because he's comparing it to, you know, whatever people want to say about Andre Smith, but there was a top 10 pick, 8-year starter, or six, whatever it was, Witt, you know, probably deserved Pro Bowl nods long before last year,
mm-hmm.
borderline Pro Bowl guards, first rounder in Zeitler. I mean, so he's like in comparison, you're talking about the youngest guy, and so I get what he's saying. I don't quite buy into the comparison of like, oh, Zeitler 3 years ago or, oh, Bowling 2 years ago. Like, I don't know that. You know what I mean? Like, I can't – I wasn't here, first of all, but I don't think that's accurate. I mean, if you're playing, you're playing, right?
Right.
But I do think there is something to – you can't compare a guy to guys who have either, A, who are better at their respective positions, and, B, who are more experienced and whatever. I've never been on the Russell Bodine, like, hate train, whatever you want to call it. I've never really gone that way as a lot of people have. I get it. But, yeah, you know, Christian Westerman was drafted, and Marvin Lewis and Paul Alexander said he can play center. We asked him if he could. He's never played it in college. We think it'd give him a year. I mean, Russell Bodine's – you do the math. Russell Bodine's contract comes up in a couple years. Like, so it makes sense that they needed some depth. And, look, Zeitler's contract's up. We touched on that earlier.
They needed an interior offensive lineman, period.
So, like, it makes sense from a depth pick in the fifth round. You know, I thought it was interesting, yeah, that Paul Alexander had enough.
Yeah.
Man, those barbers. Thank those barbers.
Those barbers got him all riled yeah. up. They got him all
riled
up.
I wonder if
up.
He didn't get – if Paul Alexander doesn't get a haircut before the draft, does this even happen?
We don't get that great fodder that
right.
dominated our numbers all weekend. Because it is interesting. I my opinion on Russ has always been the same way, is very much along the lines of what Paul Gunner just said. He is the weakest link on the line. But they have been a pretty darn good offensive line
right.
with him. He's taken pretty much every snap for two straight yeah. years.
32 straight games starting
as a
rookie.
A first and second right. year guy. He, in theory, he's going to get better. I mean, he was a young guy coming out too. So
yeah, he's the same right now. He's the same age as Christian Westerman.
That said, he needs to make a jump.
Yeah.
I mean, at a certain point, you have to start being better.
Right. And Russell did tell me that on Monday, you know, in the locker room. First of all, he said, I guess it's great that Paul Alexander did that. Mm-hmm. I mean, he says he doesn't really listen to what we say or what we write. But then he said, I need to play to my potential.
Yeah.
So he admitted.
He hasn't run from that.
No, he's never,
I mean, I remember right. writing a feature about him last training camp, and he didn't run from it at all. He said, you know what, I took a lot of snaps as a rookie, but I needed to play better, and I wasn't as physical as I needed to be, and I wasn't as this, and I wasn't as that. I mean, he owns it. He stands up to it, and there's something to be said for that. There's also something to be said for the fact you got to eventually progress.
Right.
So this is a big year for him, and I think obviously, though, he clearly has support in his room. So that's where we're at with that. All right, let's wrap this baby up. So the last two picks, the second receiver came as we expected it to be. And after they took Tyler Boyd, you knew there was a certain type that they were going to want to get. They were going to want to get the over-the-top that we mentioned earlier.
Right.
They didn't get out of Boyd. So they did that with Cody Core out of Ole Miss, which is completely reeked of, man, I just spent a whole lot of time watching Laquan Treadwell Ole Miss film, and right. I keep liking the other guy.
Yeah,
you know, that's what happens with these types of things.
Yeah, and Marvin Lewis actually evoked the name of Marvin Jones. Big, athletic, go get it, fast.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of needs to develop. I mean, I asked Marvin straight up.
He didn't
up,
like raw. He
no,
didn't like
I
you saying
like,
he was
he's
raw.
Raw. And he's like, no, he's not raw. I was like, well, but he didn't. He's only played 2 years of full-time receiver.
Yeah.
So then he was kind of like, oh, yeah. You know?
All right, maybe he's a little
yeah,
raw.
So, I mean, but yeah, that's that guy.
Yeah.
You know, the run-and-go-get-it guy who they clearly like for that set of ball skills.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's not a whole lot to say about that. It's a six-round receiver. You're hopeful. It's a gift to Darren Simmons for this year. Who could come in and this dude can come in and fly
right.
and play some gunner as well, which is the same thing with William Jackson. I mean, now they're stacked at gunner again
yeah.
with some speed out there.
Right.
Nick Vigil is really fast and can for a linebacker. So you get another good special teams guy there, which, you know,
kind of fills the Lemur spot on special
and
teams.
And the Hawks spot.
Right. Yeah, and the
which
Hawk,
was
right.
not, which was non-existent
exactly.
on special teams.
Right, right.
So, you know, they cut Hawk, which we haven't had a BBP since then, but that was kind of something we saw coming. They cut Hawk and basically replace him with Nick Vigil. Now you get a guy who can bring you special teams and right. probably give you something maybe relatively similar to what you would you got out of AJ right. Hawk as far as you know a backup type of guy who can play in a pinch. The last pick was they filled the safety, the back of the safety room, Clayton Fedulum, which is just a crazy story. You never the opening of his profile said a no-star defensive back. Who went to an NAIA school just to play.
Right.
Ends up doing great there. Ends up landing at Illinois. And ends up leading the Big Ten in right. tackles last year. As a Jew, I mean, he came from, I mean, he's a work hard, try hard, overcome the odds type.
Yeah.
So kind of a cool story. This dude just kind of came out of absolutely nowhere. To get himself drafted in the seventh round.
Yeah, and I'll if any Illini fans are listening, Clayton, if you're listening, I will apologize for the incorrect picture. Sort of had some fun Twitter moments with former yes. Illinois quarterback Nathan Shielhouse, who, you know, I don't know if Clayton's on Twitter. He's been added a ton. You know, there was a picture issue early, and you got to thank Twitter.
Twitter will tell you.
Yeah, Twitter will
Twitter
tell,
tell you if you put the wrong photo.
Hopefully
up.
He's got a sense of humor. It's a good icebreaker when we meet him this yeah. week at rookie camp. But you're right, Paul. I mean, it's one of those things where Marvin Lewis said, again, hey, if he's going to make the team, if he's going to participate, it's on special teams. And we like that kind of guy.
Yeah.
You know, makes tackles. There, good story. I mean, it, you know, it's, that's pretty much Marvin Lewis's statement
yep.
on Clayton Fedulum. What was that right there? So, you know, needed that guy.
Yep. So that's the draft. Seven dudes. And we'll give you more as we go along on some of the undrafted guys. That yeah. official list won't come out until they all pass the physical. And we've got a list up now of those that have basically said that we have reports on that have they haven't signed officially
right.
yet. Because nothing – we had guys last year that said yeah. they were coming here and didn't pass physicals
right.
and that type of thing. So nothing is for sure until we see them on Friday. So we'll keep an eye out on that. But you want to go, we have the undrafted tracker,
yeah.
Which is up on the site. So you can go and look at some of the guys who, in theory, are going to be joining the squad as well. So, yeah, we've got all that there. But we'll dig more into that later after rookie camp. We'll get a better chance to get a feel for some of those guys. So keep an eye out for that. That wraps it.
Yeah.
Let's end it. It was a good... good draft season. I'm happy that it's over because this is more officially off season now.
Yeah.
And not a whole lot happens except a whole lot of hoping dudes don't get hurt between now
yeah.
and the open of camp, which is the end of July. So, yeah, thanks for everybody for listening to the BBP. We got to go out with some. Do you have anything?
I do.
You
I'm going to honor myself.
You're going to honor. Are you going to honor the moment? Of
I'm going to honor the moment and.
Oh.
And the song is Ghost Town DJs, My Boo. And all I'll say to the BBP listeners, because we are everywhere. We're on TV. We're on podcasts. You got to go to the Inquirer Facebook page.
Yep.
We did a Facebook Live video on Friday
afternoon.
So we weren't even like into the draft, and I had already lost my mind.
Already lost your mind.
And, you know, Paul's usually like the screen cap king. You know, you'll see Paul on like the screen caps everywhere on Cincinnati.com and, you know, whatever else you do. And
I don't even know how I make some of those faces.
You know, and so it was one of those things where I had to surprise you and Mallory Sullivan, our wonderful Facebook Live director at that moment, and do a little Running Man challenge.
Part out of nowhere. Was, out of nowhere.
Exactly. Part
you
of it
just
was,
jumped up
yep.
and just started dancing. And I haven't... That's, the only other time I ever saw you dance was when we had to in the Jeremy Hill Dance
right.
Challenge. At
and I was
Stripes.
Really disappointed in that. I thought I did a better job with my running man, but see, you didn't quite see my feet. And that's where all the running man challenges, but I think I yeah. did a good job. And
you did do a good job. you made love to the camera.
Yeah.
I mean, you were giving it the eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it spins, points,
It was great.
It was so unpredictable.
I was motivated because MC Hammer followed me on Twitter after like shouting him out.
He did.
You know what I mean? So I had it. I was a little sleep deprived. So,
you were feeling the fever.
Yeah. So I'm going to honor myself by saying we should go out. Ghost Town DJs, my boo.
Yeah, I agree.
And I will run. And when that's playing, people, you can't see me, but I will Running Man challenge out the door.
Wow. Go back and watch. It's the last minute of our Facebook. It's amazing. It's amazing. And I still can't even believe it happened. So
mic drop.
Mic drop indeed. Well, my boo, take it over. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the BBB. We'll catch you soon.
I've got you on my mind. Your secret admirer. I've been watching.